Center. Welcome to the second session of Meditation 101 with Scott. Appreciate that most of you were here last week, and a few new faces, we appreciate that equally. Realizing that there is no charge for any of our classes, because the teachings are priceless, literally. We appreciate donations. This is how the center functions, but nothing is expected. Thank you very much for coming. Your presence is all that we could ask for. So, without any further delay, I'd like to introduce Scott, and most of you have been here, so enjoy the second session of Meditation 101.
Thanks, Mike. Is this working?
Nothing, I don't think.
No, that's perfect. Okay. Thank you. So, welcome back, everybody. Is there anybody, a couple people who are here who are not here last week, I think? One, two, a couple? Okay. Anybody who's here for the very first time at Canopus Center, first time ever? Yeah? Okay, great. Welcome. I think a really nice way to start these things is if you just say hi to the people right around you. So if it's somebody that you met last week, just say hi. If it's somebody totally new, say hi anyway. So, just a few reminders, and for, you know, if you are new here, I always encourage people, everybody's sitting up kind of nice and close, which is really nice. I like that. You're welcome to sit in the back if you want, but it's kind of nice if we all sit a little closer, just so we're not shouting at each other. So I always encourage people to do that, but you're welcome to sit wherever you want. If you are sitting in a chair, it's preferable when you're meditating, if you're sitting in a chair, that your feet rest comfortably on the floor. So if you need to get a cushion, that's why we have these little maroon round cushions laying around. So if you are sitting in a chair and you need one of those to rest your feet on, just so your feet are resting flat on something. And we're not formal here at all. Even less so when I'm leading class. So if you need to get up, use the restroom, please do. And one thing I ask is that everybody turns off their cell phone off or airplane mode or something where it won't make any noise at all. If you really have to, like, you know, you've got a sick kid at home or something where you really need to be able to get a text or something if someone sends one, that's understandable. But otherwise, it's best to have your cell phone set to meditate. You guys all have to come back next week. You have to promise you come back next week because I'm supposed to have – I have these little handouts that explain a little bit about Canopus Center and, like, some of the introductory stuff I did last week that, you know, so I don't have to repeat it. I forgot my handouts because I like giving those to everybody. So you got to come back next week so you can get your little handout that tells you about Canopus Center and Meditation 101. But I will have those next week for anybody who wants one. So my name is Scott. I've been coming here to Canopus Center for about 10 years for the people who – weren't here last week. I lead meditate just the very, very, very basic beginner classes, Meditation 101 and Buddhism in a nutshell. When I'm not doing that, I'm usually cutting the grass, one of the people who does that. And most of what I know, I've been interested in meditation for a really long time, like even since I was in high school. Most of what I know about meditation I've learned here, a little bit from other different studies. But so yeah, that's about it. One thing as far as being not really formal and getting up and stuff, I really recommend you get up and move around a little bit. Hello, come on in. Oh, hi. I recommend that you get up and stretch a little bit. If we've been sitting for a while doing a meditation, you know, we'll do some for like 10 minutes or so, maybe 15 minutes of a stretch. And you'll see me usually afterwards get up and wander around a little bit. So I encourage everybody to do that. Keep some blood flowing. You don't definitely don't have to sit in place for the whole hour and a half that we're going to be here. And let's see. I think that's about it as far as the introductory stuff. What it's really nice to do in the beginning is just do a really brief meditation. So if you're this here for the first time, totally new to meditation, that's fine. Just this is really simple. Just follow along as best as you can. Just get in a comfortable seated position. If you're sitting in a chair, it's fine. Like I said, it's better to have your feet resting flat, both feet flat on the floor. If you're sitting on a cushion, then whatever position is comfortable in the cushion. You can have your hands resting in your lap or on your knees, whatever you prefer. Does anybody remember from last week, what is the most important thing when you're meditating as far as how you're sitting? I said one thing is really important. Yes. Yeah, straight back, straight spine, right? So just as long as you're sitting up straight, if you're sitting in a chair, try to sit up straight so that you're not, like, slouching back against the back of the chair. Sitting in a cushion, that's one of the reasons why we use the cushion. It raises your butt up a little higher than your lower legs and your knees and your feet. And it's a little more comfortable that way, but also it helps you keep your back straight. So wherever you're sitting, if you, that's why we have the cushions around. Feel free to grab one or two or however many you need to be comfortable. So just to start, we're going to do the counting the breaths meditation, which we did last time. And if, again, if you weren't here last time, it's pretty simple. Just follow along. So just sitting comfortably, focus your attention on your breathing. And breathe naturally. Just focus the mind on the rising and falling of your shoulders and chest as you inhale and exhale gently. And allow your mind to settle and become calm and present, and ready to engage in meditation. Take a moment and notice anything you notice around you, any sounds, whether you're warm or cool. You might hear some sounds outside or some sounds here in the room. Just notice them. Just notice that they're there. And bring your attention back in to your breath. Again, just breathing naturally. So we like to create an altruistic motivation for any meditation session. It's a good way to start. So think that you're meditating not just for your own individual benefit, but you're taking the time now to meditate and develop your mind to become a wiser and kinder person, able to be of benefit to all beings. Bring your attention to the opening of your nostrils. Pay attention to the very subtle sensations there as you breathe out and in through your nose. You might feel certain sensations as the breath passes, as the small hairs of your nose move. You might notice cooler sensations as you inhale, maybe warmer sensations as you exhale. Don't follow the air out into the body, or into the body, or out into the surrounding environment. Just rest your attention on the sensations associated with the breath right at the opening of your nostrils. Your job is to keep your attention placed firmly on those sensations only. So again, just breathing naturally, paying attention to the sensation of the breath right at the tip of your nostrils, right at the opening of your nose. And as you exhale and then inhale, mentally count each exhalation and then inhalation together as one. exhale, inhale, mentally count one. As you exhale and inhale, mentally count two. And count from one to ten, just concentrating on those sensations at the tip of your nose. When you reach ten, begin again at one. So if you become distracted at all, if your mind wanders to other things and moves away from the point of concentration, just gently, without any further discussion with yourself about it, bring your attention back to the breath and begin again at one. Even if you never get past two, it's not a problem. The point is to train your mind to focus on one point only. And this kind of concentration can take some practice to attain. So as we bring the meditation to a close, take a moment to dedicate your positive energy and insights, any benefits you've acquired by doing this meditation practice, dedicate those to the well-being and happiness of all living beings. Try to really develop that feeling. Dedicating all your merits, all your positive benefits from doing this to the benefit of all. And when you're ready, bring your attention back into the room. So for anybody who was here last week, we said a few different things about meditation. It's kind of an introduction to what it is and what it's all about and why we do it. Does anybody remember anything particular that we discussed? Any of the facts about meditation, the information about meditation that we discussed? Anything jump into your mind? Yeah. Means familiarize. Yeah, the Tibetan word for meditation is gom, which means familiarization, which seems a little weird to some people because, you know, if you have different ideas about meditation, what it is and what it's for, and then we say, oh, yeah, the word in Tibetan is familiarization. Seems kind of strange. But let me remember what we're becoming more familiar with. Yes?
Be aware.
We're trying to be aware. Aware of what? Mm-hmm. The moment. Yeah, the moment. What's going on right now. Yeah. Okay. Trying to become more familiar and more aware of our own mind, right? That's part of it. Trying to be more aware of our own mind. And particularly the purpose of meditation, at least from this tradition, is to become more familiar with virtuous states of mind. I think I briefly mentioned what we consider, you know, in this tradition, a virtuous state of mind. Does anybody remember what that is? It's kind of a definition. So virtuous states of mind are states of mind that lead to happiness. So things like, you know, compassion, love, generosity, patience, those are all viewed as things that lead to happiness, to your happiness and the happiness of others. Non-virtuous states of mind are things like kind of the opposites, anger, jealousy, impatience, things that lead to suffering. Either ours or other people's suffering. So we're trying to become more familiar with virtuous states of mind and reduce the negative states of mind that we experience. So that's one of the goals in this tradition, this type of meditation. So remember, anyone remember I said how long meditation has been around that we know of? How long people have been practicing meditation? Does anybody remember that? Yeah.
4,000.
About 4,000 years, yeah. So the Shakyamuni Buddha, who started, you know, Buddhism, this particular philosophy and tradition, he lived 2,500 years ago in India, and he was teaching meditation in India back then. And what he taught was based on earlier Indian traditions that have been around for a couple thousand years. So, you know, it's been around for a while. It's been taught many different ways and by many different teachers for different reasons. So there are a lot of different types of meditations and styles of meditations. So, you know, what you hear, if you've practiced in other places, what you hear here may be different from what you've heard in other places. And that's okay. You know, we're just here to present information about meditation as it's practiced specifically in Tibetan Buddhism. Our teacher, a resident teacher here, Geshe Gelug, I mentioned him last week. He's a resident, he's a Buddhist monk. He went into the monastery when he was like 7 years old, and he's around my age, he's in his 40s. So he's been studying meditation for a really long time. And a couple of things he always says that are really important when you consider like how we're presenting this class. One of the things he always says is, I didn't make this up last night. And what I'm saying here has been said many times, has been taught and tested and found to produce good results. So And he's very serious about that, you know, as a Geshe is an academic title that they give in the Buddhist monasteries in Tibetan, specifically in the Gelupa Tibetan Buddhist monasteries. And it means he's a scholar. He's an expert in the study and the texts that have been written on Buddhist philosophy and particularly on meditation. So what he tries to teach us is strictly based on what he's learned and passing on those and not trying to embellish too much on his own. He does a little bit, but I'm not as good at it as he is, so I'm probably going to embellish more than I should. I'll try to keep my opinions to myself, but they'll slip in there. But I'm going to do the best I can to just, you know, share information about Buddhist meditation that I've learned here. Another thing that he says is this is for the sake of information. He always says that, like, we could be sitting in a class that's intended for, like, really serious students of Buddhism, and, you know, he's sitting up there, and there are maybe 15 people in here, and we've all been studying here for years, and, you know, we're all really serious students, and, you know, he'd say, this is just for the sake of information. And what he means by that is he's not trying to convince anybody that they should be a Buddhist. That's not his business, right? Not my business. It's totally up to you. So what we're trying to do here, I'm trying to do the same thing. I'm sharing this for the sake of information, just to share the information with you that's been taught and studied about meditation in this tradition. And then it's up to you to decide what you want to do with it. I encourage you to try it out. I encourage you to, you know, I'm going to give you homework and encourage you to go home and try this stuff. But, you know, really, it's up to you. Interesting thing about meditation is, again, it's been studied, you know, for thousands of years, mainly in different Indian spiritual traditions, Asian spiritual traditions. But it's also, for about the past 50 years, been extensively studied in the West by modern scientists, neuroscientists, psychologists, medical doctors. There's a huge amount of research. So when I'm in my real job, I teach test prep. I teach the law school prep courses for the law school admission test. And I'm a little bit stricter about it with my students. I tell them all, you need to go do this. You need to go home and practice these, you know, 10-minute concentrate. I do the same thing, the counting the breaths one, just like we did. I teach my students that. I tell them to go do it because there's a lot of really interesting research, modern scientific research showing the benefits of meditation, just the same little 10-minute practice we just did. There are health benefits, there are psychological benefits. One of the benefits is it reduces anxiety and improves concentration. So if you're preparing for a 3-hour standardized test where you're going to have to focus intently and not be distracted for 3 hours under very stressful conditions, meditation is kind of useful. But it is very interesting, the combination of this, you know, very, very ancient spiritual tradition and then, you know, modern research showing benefits too. So one of the things I said at the end of class last time was that we were going to, I was going to ask you to practice the meditations that we did. Up here on the board, you can see there's a website, kadampa-center.org, Meditation 101. If you can't see it, if you're sitting in the back and you want to see it, you can come up after class and take a look. But we have handouts there that basically are all of the meditations that we do in this class. You can download the handouts and read them yourself. Also, this book, How to Meditate, we have it here in the bookstore. This contains a lot of the meditations that we do are taken from this book. It's a really good, a lot of what's in here is very, maybe of more interest to people who are specifically interested in Buddhism, but there are a lot of stuff in here that anybody can use, whether you're interested in Buddhism or not. The meditations that we do in this class and some other ones. So if you're interested in some printed material, that's there. My email address is up there too. If you have any questions in between classes and you want to shoot me an email, you're welcome to do that anytime. So how many people did that? How many people did the homework and practiced some of the meditation a little bit, maybe at least a couple times? Okay, great. Anybody have any experiences or questions that they want to share? And we'll use the mic for this because that way people who are listening, if you miss a class and you want to listen to a recording, we record them all and you can go to our website and listen to them. That's why we use the mic, so that if somebody's listening to the recording, they can actually hear you. But does anybody have anything they want to share? Any questions or experiences or difficulties or benefits or... How'd it go for you? Anything you wanna share or describe?
You looking at me?
Oh, sorry, in the white shirt. I'm sorry, I don't know your name. Yeah.
I'm sorry. For me, I tried it once.
Mm-hmm.
I thought I was gonna do it every day.
Mm-hmm.
And It didn't go very well.
Oh, no? Why not? Why didn't
no,
it go well?
I just got very distracted in my environment.
Oh, so you got distracted. So you tried it once, mm-hmm. and you said it didn't go very well because you got distracted. Okay.
I think it was the timing. I put it at a time when everything was really rushed. And.
I think we have a microphone
I didn't hear
issue.
Much. mm-hmm. I think it was the timing. Mm-hmm. I didn't give myself enough time around it, and I think I was, you know, I have a few minutes I can sit down and do this, and that mm-hmm. really wasn't the right frame of mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so just sometimes try a different time. That's one of the reasons why a lot of times they recommend first thing in the morning, because you get up and before you start anything else, take a few minutes to do it. So that may be a good time for a lot of people.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. Thank you for sharing. Susan, did you have anything to share? Did you any thoughts, ideas? Did you give it a try?
I did give it a small try. I did it twice right before I went to bed,
mm-hmm.
and I found that I could not fall asleep after the meditation.
Oh,
so I decided that I needed to do it some other time because I just think maybe, and I'm not sure why, maybe just the lack of focus then when I was finished just made my brain wander too much or something. I'm not sure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It is kind of work if you're really trying to improve your ability to concentrate and really just focus on the breath and avoid distractions. You know, there are meditations that are designed to help you relax. But this isn't necessarily one of them. It is a little bit of a workout. So, you know, maybe right before bed isn't the best time. Maybe that's why they say first thing in the morning and not right before bed. Sometimes for some people that does work, though.
I do have a question. One of the things that I think a lot of it has to do with breath work.
Mm-hmm.
And will we be getting into different types of breath work, or is there different – is that not part of the meditation?
What do you mean by breath work?
When I take yoga, one of the things that you really learn is how to breathe deep, how to do deep mm-hmm. cleansing breaths.
Mm-hmm.
And I find that very relaxing, whereas mm-hmm. with the more shallow breathing, mm-hmm. focusing here, it's not, maybe not quite as relaxing. It's easier to focus mm-hmm. a little bit more, but I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out the differences between the different types of meditations that I've learned.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I know what you're talking about with yoga, doing the deeper cleansing breath. And sometimes in yoga classes, different teachers will talk about like really focusing on your, you know, your diaphragm expanding and where the breath actually happens. We're not going to do that here. Most of the meditations that we're doing are going to be focusing on just breathing naturally, which is a little bit difficult. I don't know if anybody finds that difficult, but sometimes when you're, you know, you're doing like a meditation where you're counting the breath, you have a tendency, once you start paying attention to your breath, to force yourself to breathe a certain way. So you just kind of gently remind yourself, just relax, breathe naturally. Like, think of yourself as watching the breath more than doing anything with your breath. You know, your body's just going to breathe and you're just going to watch. So that's what we more focus on, is natural breathing. We're actually going to do one at the end of the session today where we do a little bit more of a focused type of breathing. Not necessarily the same thing as you would do in yoga, but it is a very specific way of breathing. Yep. I know you had a question in the back.
Yeah, for me, it was kind of like a challenge because usually I meditate, but then I focus more on your body and how it feels. So when I try to do this breathing, it always made me anxious and feel like, oh, man, now I'm anxious, you know, and I get all these thoughts. So it was really like a challenge for me to this week to learn to breathe normally.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually worked. I'm really proud of myself. But one thing that I did differently is that every time I would breathe out, I would make like a noise, which mm-hmm. was, it's kind of strange at first. But I mean, my husband did it one time and it cracked me up. But then I started doing it myself and it actually really worked. And it gave me like, I don't know, but there's like this peaceful energy. Mm-hmm. I just felt like a peaceful energy mm-hmm. with that hum that I did. Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
So sometimes, you know, again, there are different meditations that are done for different reasons, and some of them you will focus more on your body. I think it's really good to try different kinds, though, and try to do them the way that, you know, the way that they're presented. So if you're looking at the handouts and trying to follow those steps, because it is different. And again, the breathing meditations that we do, the concentration meditations we do, the whole purpose of it is to be aware of what's going on in your mind and aware of your thoughts, because we do think all the time. That's what our minds do, right? The function of our mind is to think and to have thoughts. So we're just not always aware of them, and we're not always aware of how easily distracted we are by different thoughts. it's very interesting because if you really start doing this breathing meditation on a regular basis, one of the things the teachers say, and I experienced this a little bit myself, I think, is, you know, so you're sitting and you're trying to just concentrate on your breath, watching your breath, and just focus on that. And then you find you're distracted by, you're thinking about something you're going to do later, or you're thinking about a conversation you had, or the shopping list that you have to do tomorrow, or the email, or, you know, there's so many things that just randomly pop into your head, weird things too. Like, why am I thinking about that? And one of the things that teachers say is you're getting better at it when it seems like it's getting worse. And at a certain point, it'll seem like, wow, I'm so distracted. You know, what's going on? I've been doing this meditation for, you know, a month now, and it seems like I'm more distracted. And what they say that is you're just more aware. It's not that you're having more thoughts or more being pulled in more different directions than you ever were. You're just more aware of it. We're not really aware of how many thoughts are shooting through our mind on a constant basis, and how we get distracted by them so easily. So you become more aware of it, and then you know, bring your attention back to the breath. One of our, I forget who has this analogy. I think it's David McLeese. He's another one of our members here who leads these classes. No, it's Andre Smith. He has a great analogy for this. It's like training a puppy, right? Anybody ever try to train a little puppy? You know, and so you say, sit, and the puppy goes and runs over, and so you take the puppy and bring it back and sit. And the puppy looks at you and then goes over there, right? And that's the way your mind is, like a little puppy. So you just have to be very patient and realize that the puppy is going to sit there for a second and then go wander off and see a bug, right? So then just gently bring the puppy back, and eventually the puppy learns to sit, right? And that's exactly the way it is with your mind. And you have to be patient with yourself like that, just like you'd be patient with a little puppy. Mike, can you bring the – we have a comment.
Any questions? What do you think about the difference between an individual practice and a group practice? Like, I took advantage of coming here Saturday because for me it feels very supportive to be in a room with other people.
Me too. One of the reasons I like leading this class is because I think, I really need to be better about meditating every day if I'm telling other people to do it. So, yeah, it is helpful. It's very helpful. I mean, eventually you want to get to the point where you're just doing it on your own, whether you're meditating with a group or not. But, yeah, it's definitely very helpful. It's definitely very helpful, I think. Yeah. Did you have a question or a comment? I think you raised your hand a minute ago. Yeah.
I just want to share with you all that meditation is very helpful, and I would like you to have a knowledge about that, because I've been doing for a couple of, I don't know how many years, but it makes me happier, more, I can do things better, tireless, you name it, it's just getting better every time. So, that's what I want to share. And about the breath, so when you count your breath, when you breathe, 1, 2, 3, so. But if you feel your body tight somewhere, your shoulder or your back or something, and you breathe in deep, and you breathe out, you focus that one. So just relax you. So you can sit long as you want, and, you know, by the time. So that's what I want to share with you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Then that is a good, you might find that useful. I'll probably mention that somewhere along the way. But if you do feel like you're sitting and you feel anything tense or uncomfortable, if you focus on breathing, like, into that spot, that can help relax a little bit. So you might find that useful. Thank you. Okay. So we're going to take a moment now, or a few moments, and talk about the Buddhist view of the mind. And it's important because that's really what this is all about. Not just Buddhism, but this particular practice of meditation that comes from this tradition. So what is the mind? Let's get a definition first. Let's make sure we know what it is. What is mind? What is mind? Yes. Do you want to, let's use the microphone, because I'm sure if anybody's listening to the recording, they might find this interesting.
In scientific terms, the mind would be the brain, specifically where your thoughts come from, the cerebrum.
Okay. So in scientific terms, it's the brain. Okay. Anybody else have any definitions?
our consciousness.
Consciousness, okay. Yeah, anything else? Do you have another mic?
When you're having thoughts, it's usually your emotions and your memories.
So emotions and memories too, yeah. Thoughts, emotions, memories, feelings. Okay. So if we talk strictly, so the scientific view of the mind, I'm very interested in the scientific view of the mind. I think it's very fascinating. I think if you were to ask, like if you were to ask most people, like, you know, what's the mind, like, you know, where is the mind? What is the mind? People would say your brain, right? We even say that, right? We say use your brain, right? When you're encouraging somebody to think, come on, use your brain. And I think most of us think that of the mind and the brain is the same thing in the West. Maybe somebody who studied, if you studied like science a little more, biology, neuroscience, maybe read some articles or something, you know that there are certain chemical and electrical activities that go on in your brain, and you know, the common view is that's what your thoughts are, right? That's what causes your thoughts, and your feelings and emotions, dopamine, all that stuff that goes on in there. So it's very interesting, though, if you start asking like neuroscientists, psychologists, medical doctors, you start asking them about consciousness and the mind and the brain, you'd probably get a few different responses. So you'd probably talk to some scientists who would say, well, yeah, the brain, activity in the brain is what causes our mind or causes our thoughts. And other people would say, well, it's, you know, because there's certainly some evidence that would support that. Other people would say it's not really that clear. There's a lot of debate about this and a lot of disagreement about it. If you were to say, like, how far away is the sun or how far away is the moon, right? We can measure that. And an astrophysicist could explain exactly the experiment that was done to tell that and the calculations and everything, and it's all pretty cut and dried. And even something like, you know, talking about the body, like, your heart causes your blood to circulate. I mean, that's pretty certain that that's what's happening, right? We have very, very certain about certain things. But the idea that the mind, that your brain causes your thoughts, is a little more open to debate. We don't really have that clear connection, like, you know, how far away is the moon, or does your heart cause your blood to circulate? It's very interesting, the debate that's going on and the different ideas about it, because it's really not that cut and dried. There's certainly a connection. I think any scientist would tell you there's a connection between the mind and the brain. There's some connection there between activity in the brain and our thoughts. They can measure it when you're thinking a certain thing. You see little arrows of your brain light up. But there's a difference between correlation and causation. So two things happening at the same time doesn't mean that one causes the other. That's a lot more higher standard of proof. And they really haven't proven that yet, that the brain causes our thoughts. So if you go to the Buddhist view of the mind, if you were to ask a Buddhist monk, he would say, well, the mind and the brain are two different things. The brain is a physical organ. It's the gray thing inside your head. Mind is non-physical. So our actual thoughts, you know, thinking, an emotion, or, you know, I see the color red, that's an interesting debate. Like, so I'm looking at that flag up there and I see it's red, but does my impression of red mean the same as yours? You know, are we really experiencing the same thing when we say that's red? So, you know, this is where things start to get interesting. And a Buddhist monk would say, well, the mind and the brain are two separate things. The brain is a physical organ. The mind, what we experience is, or, you know, mind and consciousness are kind of synonymous in Buddhist philosophy. So mind is non-physical and mind is separate from the brain. There's definitely a connection. They're definitely related, no doubt, just like any scientist would tell you. But they're not exactly the same thing. Yes. Did you?
So how does Buddhism describe the brain? What does Buddhism talk about?
The brain?
Yeah.
The brain is the gray thing inside your head.
Like that's doing what?
That is, so there, it's the function of the brain. I don't know. I don't know exactly what exact, and this, so this gets into a more, it's above my pay grade. It's more complicated than yeah. You know, that I can explain, okay. Or that I've studied. But what they will say, I can tell you what they say about the mind and what the mind is. That I can say. So the mind is, again, it's synonymous with consciousness, with awareness, and it's described in two ways, as clear and knowing. So clear is, means it's non-physical. It has no shape. It has no color. You can't actually see mind. You can't actually see someone's thoughts. You can see activity in the brain, you know, and there's a relationship between the two, but the mind itself, consciousness itself, is not physical. So that's the clear part. No shape, no color, no form. Knowing, when they say it's clear and knowing, the function of mind is to know, is to cognize, to be aware. So that's its function. That's what it does. So, that's the Buddhist view of the mind. That it's awareness. When Buddhists talk about mind, they're not specifically talking about your brain. They're talking about consciousness, awareness, your thoughts, your feelings, perceptions, everything that you experience, everything that I experience right here as a person sitting on this cushion in this room with other people around. I'm seeing things, I'm hearing things, I feel temperature. That awareness of everything, and I'm having thoughts in my head. What am I supposed to say next? Is this all making sense to these people? So all those thoughts and feelings, emotions, that's all consciousness. That's all mind. Different parts of the mind, right? So another thing is, and this is changing a lot in Western thought. But so they're definitely connected, right? Brain and mind are connected, but they're viewed in Buddhism as two different things. And Buddhists are more interested in the mind. They're more interested in how your mind works necessarily than how your brain works. So another thing about the mind is Buddhists definitely view the mind as changeable, right? You can change your mind. You can change your thoughts. You can change your patterns of thoughts. And it might take effort, but it's absolutely possible to change your thoughts. And, you know, if you were to go back maybe, I don't know, 20 years, maybe longer than that. I don't know. I'd have to look up the actual history to know it. But if you were to go back a ways, several decades, and talk to a neuroscientist or psychologist or doctor, they would probably tell you that the Western view of the brain was very fixed, right? So your brain develops up to a certain age, you know, and then after that, you're kind of stuck with what you got. You know, it was kind of a common view back, you know, a certain time ago. But that's actually changed quite a bit. Now you hear neuroscientists talk about neuroplasticity, which is the idea that our brains are our brains, the hardwired part, the hardware. You know, maybe that's a way to view it. The brains are the hardware and the mind is the software, right? So the brains are, our brains are actually very changeable, right? And they do change throughout our entire lives. And our, you know, the things we think of as thoughts aren't really concentrated in one specific part of our brain, but distributed a lot more than they used to think. So it's interesting in that way that the Western view and the Buddhist view are kind of coming together a little bit, that the mind is changeable. We have the ability to change it. And we can, with conscious effort, change our patterns of thought and behavior. So, we also have a tendency, an interesting tendency, to think of our thoughts as the mind, as us. You know, our thoughts, what we think is our mind and kind of defines us, right? But in the Buddhist view, thoughts are separate from the mind. Thoughts and the mind are actually, there's the mind and then there are the thoughts in the mind. So making this analogy would be that it's like the mind is the ocean. And our thoughts are like, our thoughts, our feelings, our emotions are like waves on the ocean. So, you know, a wave is, you know, if you're watching the ocean, you see these waves rise and they're there for a while and then they dissipate. So they're there in the ocean, but they're not actually the ocean. The waves themselves aren't actually the ocean, right? So another good analogy is they say the mind is like, a clear lake. So imagine if you've ever been somewhere and seen, like, first thing in the morning, a perfectly still, crystal, clear lake, perfectly reflecting lake, or like up in the mountains, you know, a perfectly reflecting lake. So you see reflections of clouds on the lake, you see reflections of the trees, and maybe a mountain, you know, you can kind of imagine that. So those reflections there, they're on the lake, but they're not part of the lake, they're separate from the lake. And those reflections may come, I mean, you imagine a cloud passing over the lake, and you have this reflection that arises on the lake, and it's there for a while, and then it goes away. So that's very much the way that the Buddhist view of the mind and thoughts. The mind is like the lake, and our thoughts are like reflections on that lake that just kind of pass by. They come, they're there for a while, and then they go. So it's a nice, you know, the upshot of all this is that we're not stuck with our thoughts. we do tend to think of our ways of thinking, certain ways of thinking, as being very fixed. You know, I am this way, I am that way. And, you know, the Buddhist view is that we really have a lot more ability to change this. They're really habits, and you can change habits. So a lot of, you know, what we're working on in meditation is the ability to recognize that and kind of view our thoughts that way as impermanent, as kind of temporary phenomena, things that just kind of come and are there for a while and then go, but not as fixed or as part of us as we often think they are. So there's any questions about that? Questions, comments, thoughts about that? Yeah. Can we give a...
I was sort of thinking about it in terms of life and death.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the brain is alive when you're alive in the physical form. But when you die, the brain is no longer functioning.
Mm-hmm.
So under what you're talking about, the mind would remain at that point. So the question becomes, this is the next thing, was, so at that point, where are the thoughts, feelings, and emotions? Are they attached to the mind or the brain? Like when you die,
mm-hmm.
do you still have thoughts, feelings, and emotions?
So I can tell you the Buddhist view on that. And I'm not going to get too far into it because we have a whole other class called Buddhism in a nutshell. So what Buddhists would say is that there are different levels of mind. So we're all aware of the idea of consciousness and then subconscious, right? I mean, that's a pretty common Western idea, and we're all familiar with it on some level, right? So you have your conscious thoughts, your conscious mental activity, and there's all the stuff that goes on in the background, right, that we're sometimes aware of, sometimes not so much. So Buddhism breaks it down even further. Buddhist philosophy would say there's the gross level of conscious, the subtle level of conscious, and the very subtle level of consciousness. And so the gross level of consciousness is what we're aware of. The subtle level of consciousness is kind of like the subconscious. And the very subtle level of consciousness is really more of like the essence of the mind itself. That's the clear lake, right? That's the clear lake part. So it doesn't contain necessarily all of our thoughts and personalities and jokes and stuff like that. All the stuff that we tend to think of as us, that we like to think of as sticking around forever. That's not part of mind. Those are the clouds and the reflections on the lake. So those things do dissipate. When our physical body is gone, our gross and subtle levels of consciousness are gone too. They're part of our temporary being right now. But what Buddhism would say is there is the very subtle level of consciousness, the essence of mind that does continue. That existed before we were here, before this physical form of Scott was here, and these thoughts and emotions and jokes, and that will exist after. And if you want to get more into that, we can. I mean, you know, come talk to me after class. I can tell you a little bit more about that, or take Buddhism in a nutshell next time it comes around, and you can get in the whole big picture of all that, which is really interesting. Whether you believe it or not, it's just interesting the way they look at it. Any other questions? Good question. Any other ones? So we're going to do a short meditation. It's on the mind like the sky, which kind of illustrates this point. So take a moment to get comfortable and arrange yourself however you like. So last time we talked about the 7-point meditation posture, which, again, I'll go over that kind of briefly. If you're sitting in a chair, again, the important thing is have your feet resting flat on something, whether they rest flat on the floor or whether they're resting on a cushion, just so they're resting flat on something. And again, if you're in a chair, you want to make sure your back is straight. But the first point is the legs. If you're sitting on a cushion, sit however is comfortable. You can just sit in a regular cross leg position like this. That's what's comfortable for some people. You can sit with one leg on top of the other. This is called the half lotus or half vajra position. If you can sit like this pretty comfortably for a long time, and then you can sit with the other leg on top pretty comfortably for a long time, and it just so happens that you've done like martial arts and wrestling and yoga and stuff for most of your life and you have enough flexibility in your legs, then you can sit in a full Vajra cross or full lotus. Don't try this unless you fall into that category because you can hurt your knees doing this. It's not necessary. I'll sit like this sometimes just because it keeps my legs from falling asleep. But the important thing of all this is be comfortable, right? It's not that you have to sit a certain way and look a certain way or do a certain thing. Sit comfortably. Find what's comfortable for you. And that's really the whole goal of this. This is actually a way to sit that allows you to sit comfortably. If you can do it, allows you to sit comfortably for a really long time. And that's the whole reason that they, one of the reasons that they taught it. So that's your legs. Your arms, your hands. In this tradition, we have our hands palm up, palms up, right hand resting on top of the left hand, thumbs gently touching, kind of like you're holding a little piece of paper between your thumbs. And your hands just rest comfortably in your lap. Your arms should be away from your body. So let a little air circulate. Shoulders kind of back. You're sitting up in a not really stiff and rigid, but kind of a, they call it a regal position. You know, kind of sitting up like you're going to have your picture taken. Have your back straight. Sometimes it helps to think of a string coming up through the crown of your head, lifting you gently up, or like your spine is a stack of quarters. So again, not being really rigid or stiff, but just sitting up. I said, kind of like you have your picture taken. Your jaws and mouth, that's the next point. Your lips can be together. Your teeth can be apart slightly. Just jaw relaxed, right? Lips together, jaw relaxed. And your tongue, the tip of your tongue, you can take and place on the roof of your mouth right behind your front teeth. So right behind, tongue on the roof of your mouth, right behind your front teeth. And that helps reduce the need to swallow. Your eyes should be just kind of gazing out in front of you, like about 6 feet out in front of you somewhere. Not really focusing on anything in particular. If you have your eyes open, have them just slightly open, just to let in a little bit of light, or you can have them closed. And your head is tilted forward, chin down just slightly to kind of naturally direct your gaze in that direction out in front of you. If you find yourself getting a little drowsy, you can lift your head a little bit. If you find yourself, your thoughts are kind of scattered or you're easily distracted, try lowering your head a little bit. So adjust the position of your head just so you're comfortable and so it helps you focus on meditation. So in our ordinary perceptions, our thoughts and feelings seem to be all there is to our mind. One thought, feeling, image, or idea after another. All these mental contents seem to fill up our minds completely as if our minds are small, finite containers. But this is an illusion, a misperception on our parts. Our minds are vast and infinite, clear and spacious. Our minds have no boundaries, no limits. When we experience the vast, clear spaciousness of our mind, the clarity of our awareness, we begin to see how our thoughts and feelings are like clouds in the sky, simply passing through this vast, spacious awareness, not filling it up. Suddenly we have some space from the endless attachments, aversions, and dissatisfactions of life. So focus your attention on your breathing and breathe naturally. Notice the breath as it passes. You're not trying to do anything with your breath, you're just observing it. It's not always the same. Sometimes you breathe a little deeper, sometimes a little shallower. Notice the environment around you for a moment. Maybe there's some sounds outside, like a little bird or a big giant train. Some sounds here in the room. Just notice those
Don't rest your attention on them. Just notice that they're there. Bring your attention back into your breath. Spend a moment or two using one of the breathing meditations that we discussed, either counting your breaths or just focusing on the breathing out and in. Maybe just quietly thinking out and in to yourself, silently, or counting, whichever you prefer. Allow your mind to settle into a state of deeper focus and concentration, ready to engage in meditation. As always, we create an altruistic motivation for the meditation session. You think that you're meditating not just for your own individual benefit, but you're taking the time now to meditate and develop your mind to become a wiser and kinder person, able to be of benefit to all beings. So for a moment, we're going to practice the bare attention exercise, just breathing out and then in, observing the breath as it passes, right at the tip of your nose. Not counting, just observing each breath. Out and then in. Observing each breath as it passes. When you gain a deeper level of concentration and focus, loosen your concentration slightly. Emphasize the element of mindfulness in your meditation, your awareness of watching the breath. Allow your mind to be attentive and observant of whatever comes to notice, regardless of what it is. Don't identify with the mental elements that are arising. Simply observe them like a tourist. So maybe thoughts arise, maybe sensations. Just notice whatever arises. Allow them to arise, and as you observe them, and pass away without getting involved. Just be aware as you continue to breathe. Just breathe naturally. Allow your mindful attention to expand, to encompass your entire sphere of experience, of consciousness. Forget that there is an observer and something being observed. Simply imagine your experience, your consciousness, as being just like the sky, completely clear, vast, and spacious, without end. Concentrate on this experience. Identify with this experience, clarity, spaciousness, and awareness. Our minds are completely clear, just as the sky is completely clear. The light of the sun shines down on us through the clear sky. Our awareness and wisdom shines through the clarity of our minds. Sometimes clouds fill the sky and obscure the sunshine, but the sky doesn't get upset. The sky doesn't identify with the clouds. The sky doesn't judge. The clouds just pass through the spaciousness of the sky. They come and they go. The clarity and spaciousness of the sky isn't compromised by the clouds. They just arise and pass. Our minds are clear and aware, spacious like the sky. When a thought or an emotion, an idea or an image, or a sensation arises in your mind, just observe it. Let it arise and let it pass. Each thought, each mental event, just like a cloud. Your mind is the sky. Concentrate on that experience of space and bliss. Whenever we identify with and are carried away uncontrollably by a thought or a feeling, we lose any awareness of the spacious clarity of our mind, of the vast, clear, and knowing nature of the mind within which each thought or feeling occurs. Our perspective becomes small and constricted. It's as if all there is are clouds, and we've lost the sky. We lose that wonderful open spaciousness. When we can simply observe these thoughts and feelings arising without getting involved, when we can identify with the sky instead of with the clouds, then we can reside in that spacious purity of our basic clarity of mind. Calm, clear, peaceful, open spaciousness. Without agitation, without delusions, without anxiety and distress, without dissatisfaction and attachments and aversion. If you do this on your own, you can do it for 5 or 10 minutes and then take a short break and then do one more 5 or 10 minute spell and end the meditation session. So as we end this session, we'll dedicate all the positive energy you've created through the practice of mindful meditation. We'll dedicate that energy to becoming a better and better person who is more at peace in life and who can bring more peace and well-being to others in every moment of every day. And when you're ready, bring your attention back into the room. So what did you think of that? Anyone have any thoughts they want to share? Anything difficult about it? It's a little bit longer, so you might find if you are uncomfortable sitting like on a cushion for that long, for longer meditations, maybe for now you want to sit in a chair. You can move around, try different things too if you want. Any thoughts? Any ideas? What did you think of that? Yeah.
I kept feeling myself leaning forward, like further and further.
Oh, yeah?
And so I kept having, like, waves of having to focus on not, like, my body, and then I realized I'm focusing on just my body, and then coming back to what you were talking, you know, what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, I'm guessing maybe that gets better, but
it does.
Now it's just waves of... Yeah,
mm-hmm. That's one of the challenges in meditation is if you do start feeling very relaxed and then you kind of just, it's easy to start dozing off.
It's not sleeping, it's just not being aware of the position and then focusing back on your position and then having to get back in your mind. And
Yeah, they call it a sinking mind because it isn't really sleeping, but it's just, you know, you're kind of getting very heavy. So if you find yourself doing that, you might find it helpful to open your eyes a little bit more if your eyes are closed, or like I said, lift your head up a little bit. Those two things can help a little bit. You can try that.
So I have a question. Is it okay, like when I'm trying to like think of, you know, when you do the guiding, it really helps me when I visualize it. Like I can visualize my, you know, being in space kind of thing. Is it okay to visualize, or is it not the purpose?
No, I think so. I think if you're visualizing that thing that we're talking about, like the sky, visualizing a clear sky, visualizing clouds in the sky, I think if your focus and your attention is on that, that's the idea. Yeah, I think that can be very helpful. Yep.
Can you elaborate a little bit on the sleeping mind? Because I had a part of this meditation, I felt really great about it because I felt like my breathing was getting very shallow, and I was really kind of in a zone where I didn't hear anything outside of me. But I did start going forward a little bit. I thought, am I going to sleep? You know, or what's happening? I wasn't asleep, but, you know, it was very...
Yeah, I mean, there are two. So there's the state of concentration where you're very aware of the thing, whatever it is that you're trying to concentrate on, whether it's your breath or whether we're doing a guided meditation like this. There's a distracted mind. They call it the monkey mind, you know, where just there are other thoughts. You're very alert, but you're alert and aware of something else, like the shopping list or the email or the show you're going to watch or whatever, random thing pops into your mind. And then there's the sinking mind where it is kind of like just, it's almost like you're feeling a little sleepy or just dull or just kind of like spacing out or zoning out. It's not like you're really feeling distracted by anything. You're just kind of a little heavy. So that's kind of the sinking mind. Yep. Do you have a question?
I do really like the idea of the thoughts and the clouds and the sky because that helped me to kind of clear them off. But it also helped me, like all of a sudden I had the thought, oh, some days my thoughts are like a big thunderstorm up there and I can't see past anything. Like if you take a minute to try to clear, you know, maybe some of that stuff will go away is what I'm sort of, you know, of course, thinking about while this is all happening, while you're talking about the clouds and the sky.
Yeah. So,
but it does help. That did help for me. Like I could kind of let it clear, which was nice. Yeah,
this is a little more of what we call an analytical meditation, where you're actually thinking about something. You know, you're thinking about the nature of the mind being like the sky and thoughts being like the clouds, as opposed to a concentration meditation where you're just thinking about that one thing like the breath or counting. So what about the practical benefits of this? Because this is all really intended to be practical and be of practical use in your everyday life. So what might some of the practical benefits be of thinking of your mind in this way as very clear and spacious and open and vast, and thinking of your thoughts, whatever thoughts come up, as just, you know, clouds floating through that sky? What are some of the practical applications of that, do you think?
Yeah.
Thank you, Mike.
Okay, so I think when you become more aware of all the thoughts that you have, and you're just out there looking at them, you can more like pick and choose which one you prefer. Mm-hmm. And maybe in that way your life can become more positive and happy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
For me, it's able to disconnect the thoughts from who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Like you have fleeting thoughts, they may be good, they may be bad, but they don't necessarily make, it's not who you are.
Mm-hmm.
So, or even if you recognize negative thoughts, I can visually push them out of my mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Anything else? Was that a hand over there? So, yeah, both those things are really important. That's kind of the goal, because we do very much associate with our thoughts and connect to our thoughts and think that that's just, you know, that's who we are, or that's what's going on, that is what our mind is. And we don't really think of disconnecting from them or kind of choosing, you know, being a little bit more distant from them and choosing whether we want to be more positive or not. We don't always think about it in that way. Another good analogy that I like is, just to totally mix up analogies, is who's driving the bus, right? You know, it's like we going through our daily lives, we're like the bus, right? Like we're riding in the bus. And all of our thoughts and emotions are in there with us, right? And who's driving the bus? You know, is it anger? Is it just a reaction to something? Because we do react to our thoughts, right? A thought arises and we go chasing after it, right? And we let that thought, whatever it is at the time, drive the bus. So just having a little bit more distance from that, a little more space to look at that thought and go, well, is this who I want driving the bus right now? You know, because we do react to things. So, I mean, so much, I think, this is kind of the point that they talk about in the Buddhist philosophy. And when they're talking about meditation, just, I can definitely say it from my own life. We kind of feel like we have to react to every thought we have, or we let ourselves react to every thought we have. You know, driving down 40 and that person in front of you does something that you don't like, cuts you off or whatever, does something silly, maybe even something a little dangerous. And we react to that and we get really angry at that person who has no idea that we're behind them angry. And it's not like, you know, and if we do like flash our lights or give them a certain hand gesture or something, it's not like they're really going to know while we're doing that and they're going to learn anything from it, right? We're just some jerk who suddenly decided to do something to them. And so, you know, we do these things, right? We react these certain ways, and we don't always pause to think, like, is this really helping the situation? Is it really, you know, is that person suddenly going to become a better driver because I did something? You know, is that, you know, is it helping me sitting here being upset on my way to work? Is that really going to, you know, help me have a better day? So we don't always stop to question our thoughts and whether they're really doing us any good. We just have a thought and we go chasing after it and we let that thought drive the bus. So that's a big part of what we're trying to do with these meditations and you know, being aware of our thoughts and looking at them in this way that, you know, we have a mind that is this clear thing that has thoughts that arise in it. You know, just like the reflections on the clear lake or just like the waves that arise in the ocean. And the reflections on the lake are not the lake. The waves on the ocean are not the ocean. They're just something that exists there for a while.
We have that ability to separate ourselves from us. And being aware of that spaciousness of the mind, that actual quality of mind, of consciousness that's really there all the time, that the thoughts exist within, it's a nice feeling. You know, it's, I just think it's a nice way to look at things. It doesn't mean that, you know, you're going to be able to apply it right away. I mean, I've been leading these classes for a number of years, and I guarantee if I'm driving home tonight and somebody cuts me off, I might not be that clear and spacious about it. But, you know, what happens is you catch yourself doing it, right? So now you're thinking about it. And then you notice that, oh, yeah, I really didn't need to do that. And then maybe next time that it happens, or the next 10 times, the same thing happens, and you're just aware of it. But then maybe after a while, you catch yourself before you react. Right? So it's not instant gratification. It's not Google it and get the answer. But it is something to think about, and maybe if you think about it enough and you try practicing it enough, then you do see a change in your behavior, not just in your mind, but in your behavior and the way you react to situations. You know, the coworker who gets on your nerves, who, you know, every time you see that person, you just, oh. Maybe with a little bit of time and thinking about this, maybe you let that person not bother you so much. And it's just benefiting you. I mean, that person may have no idea. They walk up, hey, how you doing, Susan? You know, like if I still work with you, right, still work there, and I keep up, hey, how you doing? And every time you see me, you're like, oh, God, it's him again. You know, I don't know that. I have no idea. So are you really doing, you know, harming anybody but yourself sometimes by the way we react to people? So maybe, you know, you get that, you start thinking about that. Well, do I really need to let this person get on my nerves? Do I really need to have that thought? Is that thought doing me any good? And if it's not doing me any good, yeah, I'm going to have it, but maybe do I try to loosen it up a little bit and let it pass a little more quickly, you know. And that's the practical side of it. That's really the benefit. That's the goal, is to view our thoughts as something that happens, not something that is us, and have the ability to decide which ones we want to let drive the bus, the ones that we want to expand on, and the ones that we want to try to let out the door as quickly as possible, let them pass and let those clouds move on and go about their business without us. So that's why we do it. Any thoughts about that? And, you know, it's not easy when you're meditating. It takes practice, right? It is really practice to be able to sit here on the cushion and recognize, oh, I'm having a thought, and let it pass. But the reason you practice it here when you're meditating is because it's easier to do it here than it is out in the real world, you know, with the crazy coworker or the person cutting you off or whatever it is. It's easier to do it here on the meditation cushion than it is out there. So we practice here. We do the hard work here, and then we do the harder work out there. So any questions? And not necessarily about this, but about anything. Anything that we've talked about either today, tonight, last week. Questions, comments? Yes. Microphone. Thank you.
Talking about the metaphors about the thoughts in our mind,
mm-hmm.
I thought that ripples on a lake would be a good idea because for me, when I have one thought, it usually leads to more bigger thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like the ripples expanding out on the lake. That's a good metaphor. Yep. I think that's a very good one. Thank you. Any other thoughts or questions? Or okay. Well, we're going to do another brief meditation. And this is one that, you know, sometimes the interesting thing about trying different meditations is there's one that you really like for whatever reason that really seems to work well for you. And this is one that I learned that seemed to really help me. And so this is one that I do a lot. It's called 9-round breathing, Tibetan 9-round breathing. And it is, as far as I know, this specifically, you know, this variation of it or this specific technique comes from the Tibetan tradition. In Tibetan, it's Lungrul Gu Tuk Sel. So it's basically that translates into 9-round breathing to eliminate waste energy. So the idea is that every thought we have has some kind of energy attached to it. You know, they say that thoughts ride on energy like a rider on a horse. The thought is the rider and the energy is the horse. So every thought that we have has some type of energy attached to it. And I've heard this explained, Geshe Gelug, our teachers, explained this a couple different ways. One is that negative thoughts, negative energy. So if you're familiar with Asian medical, traditional Asian medicine, like acupuncture, they talk about energy channels in the body, the way that energy flows through the body. And so the idea is that negative thoughts, non-virtuous thoughts can actually, that negative energy kind of clogs up our channels and causes stress or physical discomfort. The other way I've heard him explain it is that because our attention is so scattered, because we're having so many different thoughts one after the other going in different directions, that so many different energies happening one after the other, that also kind of clogs up these channels. So that's waste. That's the waste energy, the scattered attention or the negative, non-virtuous thoughts we have. That's the waste energy. And so the purpose of this meditation is to eliminate that waste energy. And it leads to physical well-being and mental well-being. So to do this meditation, this one is very important to have your back straight, because the idea is that you want to have the energy channels in your body straight. And if the energy channel thing seems a little weird to you, or it's not something that you're really sure about, then just think of this as a good meditation to reduce stress, to eliminate stress. So, so you're going to start by taking your, and usually you use your ring finger, so of your left hand, your ring finger of your left hand, and you're going to block your left nostril, okay? And you're going to breathe in, and then you're going to take the same finger and block the right nostril and breathe out. Okay, so I'll do it once just to show you. So I'm going to take my ring finger of my left hand, block my left nostril, and breathe in, nice deep breath. This is one of those where you do a little bit more deeper breathing. And then I'm going to take the same finger and block my right nostril and breathe out. And do that 3 times. So in, out, 3 times. Starting by blocking your left nostril with your left finger. That's the first 3. So you can do the same thing with your right hand, your right ring finger. First block your right nostril, breathe in deeply, and then block your left nostril and breathe out, and do that 3 times. That's the second set of 3, second 3 rounds, 4, 5, 6. And now you're going to sit, and you just have your hands resting on your knees for this one, back straight, and 3 breaths in and out through both nostrils, in through both nostrils and out 3 times. And that's it. So if you want to try it again, you can do the whole thing at your own pace, however deeply you want to breathe. You generally do a little bit deeper breaths when you do this. But just remember, you're starting with your left ring finger, blocking your left nostril, breathing in, and then blocking your right nostril, breathing out. Do that 3 times. Switch, right hand, block right nostril, breathe in, left nostril, breathe out. Do that 3 times, and then in and out through both. So go ahead and try that again, just on your own. Remember to have your back straight, sit up nice and straight. So if you download the handouts from the webpage there, they go into a lot of detail about this. There's a visualization you can do, visualizing the energy channels in your body and how they come up and meet together. 3 channels meet together just below your navel, and they're different colors. And you can actually visualize breathing through those channels. You might get interested in that if you have the basic technique down. You find you can do the basic technique without having to think about it too much. And you can add that. There are a couple different variations there. Or just do the basic one. This is a good meditation to do right at the beginning of a meditation session. So if you're going to do like a maybe 10-minute meditation session or a 15-minute, you do the 9-round breathing at the very beginning just to kind of settle your mind and clear everything out. It's a good idea to blow your nose first. I usually forget that, and I don't realize I'm only breathing through one nostril, and I go, oh, can't breathe through that one. This would be difficult. So that's always a
good one for
yeah.
Actually, in yoga, it's a good way to clear nostrils.
Yeah.
That's what it is. There's a specific breathing to clear the sinuses to
that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, it's a good one to do either by itself or as a beginning at the start of a meditation session. So your homework for this week, if you'd like, is to practice one of the mindfulness meditations we already introduced, which is the bare attention exercise or the mind like the sky. There's another one, which is the mind like the ocean, which is similar, which is in the handouts. Try to practice it every day for 10 minutes. Try to pick a time when you can, you know, maybe first thing when you get up or a time when things are a little quieter. And you have just time to sit there for 10 minutes. Try to put that on your schedule. And then use either the counting the breaths or the 9-round breathing meditation at the start to settle your mind. And again, if you have any problems, interesting experiences, questions or anything, we'll talk about those next week. So we'll do just a brief dedication and take a moment to give yourself credit for showing up here tonight. A lot of other things we could have been doing. And instead, you chose to come here. You're doing something positive. As soon as you decided to come here, got in the car and headed this way, you were doing something positive. All the time that you spend here,
you're learning new things. It's always good to learn new things. Maybe you practice some of these basic meditation practices just to improve your concentration or just because they're good for you. And try to take all those positive thoughts, all the positive energy you've developed, all that merit you've developed by being here, and dedicate it not just to your own well-being, but to the well-being of all sentient beings, all living beings everywhere. Imagine you can expand out all that positive energy that you've created and share it and dedicate it to the well-being of all living beings. And just rest with that thought for a moment. So we will be back again at the same time next week. And I do have one quick commercial before you leave, as we mentioned last week. So most of the people who run this place are volunteers. I'm a volunteer. Mike's a volunteer. Chris in the back is a volunteer. Fonny volunteers in the gift shop, right, sometimes. So I think we have like one person or two people who get paid here. So we do have stuff like the electric and stuff, the mortgage that we have to pay for. So everything that we do here is offered for free, a voluntary donation basis, which means you don't have to donate anything. But if you do feel like making a donation to help us continue bringing these classes to whoever wants to take them, we have donation boxes outside. We have you can donate on our website through your phone or whatever when you get home if you want. If you are interested in volunteering, we have a lot of great volunteer opportunities here, so we can tell you about that too if you're interested in meeting some fun people and helping us keep this place going. And again, totally optional. We like to make this totally optional, totally voluntary, so that's totally up to you. I hope everybody comes back next week. Hope to see you all here next week. And we do have the sessions recorded, so if you can't make it next week, you can always go to our website and listen to the recording. Check out the handouts on the website if you haven't downloaded those yet. And like I said, if you have any questions during the week, you're more than welcome to shoot me an email, and I try to reply as soon as I can. But thank you all for coming. Thank you very much, and we will see you here next week.